You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'll be speaking with Matthew Schuller at Washington University at St. Louis, one of this year's three Graduate Student Policy Award winners. In reference to the meetings on Capitol Hill, was there anything that surprised you during the meetings, and did the staff seem receptive to what you had to say?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise for me was actually how receptive all members of Congress were to actual science funding. They definitely seemed to have a good understanding of why science would need to be funded. They definitely seemed to understand that the National Science Foundation is a generally good organization to keep around. You know, nobody talked about eliminating it from the budget. They definitely said they wanted to keep it. And, you know, the real discussion came down to whether or not the members of Congress or the staff members thought we should fund at the proposed budget of $7.37 billion or at a lower amount given the current financial problems that they're having. And really only one member was interested in funding it much lower than what we had hoped for, which I thought was, like I said, I thought that was surprising. I guess I expected more negative thoughts towards NSF. And I think one thing for me that has made me want to get more involved is I understand better where funding comes from. So when I apply for a grant, oftentimes there's sort of this disconnect between my application and the possibility of receiving money back from the government. As a young scientist, I don't fully understand all the processes, but to go to D.C. and meet people who work for NSF and meet people who are staff members in Congress and talk to them about where these dollars come from actually is very helpful for me as a scientist to decide what sort of science questions I want to ask and what things I would ask for funding. I also learned about lots of great opportunities like the AAAS Fellowship, which allows people with PhDs to take a one-year fellowship in Washington, D.C. and work in an office of a member of Congress and talk to people about science. I met with a couple people from D.C., from offices who had that fellowship, and they really seemed to enjoy their time there. And from talking to them, the AAAS Fellowship that they received helped them understand their career goals better and also help them get involved at a national level that made them feel a little bit more involved in the scientific process. And I think that's great. And it's definitely something that I'm considering doing, and I think others should as well.
You served on the board of the Timber Wolf Information Network. Could you talk a little about your involvement with them?
Yeah, wolves are a very unique animal in that, you know, they obviously have a pack structure, and it's a family structured pack. So when you get a large population in Wisconsin, you know, there's lots of wild habitat and wild forest habitat left in northern Wisconsin. But in southern Wisconsin, it's very urban. There are a lot of cities, and it really isn't a great place for wolves that need large, contiguous patches of forest or prairie environment in order to hunt and do their daily activities. And a lot of people don't realize how much habitat a single wolf pack needs. A lot of people think, oh, they're just, you know, some small dogs that can live on a few acres like a coyote can. But it's actually, they need a large amount of area. And they tend to be a charismatic megafauna that people get very attached to. So a lot of emotion comes with when people think about wolves. And with management, you sometimes have to remove individuals or packs from an area where they might be a problem. So if a pack colonizes, you know, in central or in southern Wisconsin near Madison, it would be harmful to leave them there for both themselves and people in the area. So they would need to remove those animals and either put them somewhere else or humanely put them down. And that actually causes a lot of emotional stress for people who view these as sort of charismatic megafauna, and they're still endangered in a lot of people's minds. And it's interesting to talk to both sides, both people who are very against wolves. There are a lot of people who are anti-wolf, I would say, and that's because they've possibly experienced a wolf that either attacked a dog if they were out hiking, or if it attacked cattle. That happens in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Wolves see other dogs as competitors and will attack them to get them out of their territory, and they see cattle as food. So they sometimes do attack, and explaining to people why we need wolves to, you know, manage the deer herd, and they're explaining that they're a natural part of the ecosystem is just as challenging as explaining to somebody why a wolf would need to be euthanized if it becomes a problem. And so both sides actually get very angry when you talk about just science-based management. And that's one of the reasons I got involved with the Timberwolf Information Network, is that they try and leave a lot of that emotion and sort of personal beliefs aside, and they just use good science practices to try and understand the best way to manage wolves in Wisconsin.
Among your experiences as a member of the Timberwolf Information Network board, you helped run wolf education workshops and even traveled to local, quote, rod and gun clubs to promote government investment in research in Wisconsin. What was this experience like, and how receptive were the clubs to your message?
Yeah, I believe it's really important to talk to people about good science-based management for things that they may not have a good understanding of, and especially people who, like, members of rod and gun clubs who are really interested in, you know, natural resource management, and they want to preserve the environment. That's one of the reasons a lot of these people got involved with these rod and gun clubs in the first place. And these are clubs like the Portage County Wildlife Club, which is a local club in central Wisconsin, also the Isaac Walton League in central Wisconsin, and there were a few others that were, you know, they were very focused groups that were interested in preserving land and certain habitat types in central Wisconsin for both conservation and personal use. So things like hunting and hiking, bird watching, and just regular wildlife viewing. I felt it was very important to talk to these people about the benefits that wolves have for the health of the deer herd. For example, when wolves are in an area and they eat deer, they generally take sick individuals or older individuals or very, very young individuals. And so they're effectively removing deer from the population that are, you know, not very large, or they're not reproducing as much as other individuals. They're old. And so removing those individuals actually increases the health, the overall health of the herd. And for a lot of people in Wisconsin who are very interested in sort of the sport aspect of hunting, so they're interested in larger antler sizes, having wolves in an area actually increases the antler size, the average antler size of male white-tailed deer, which a lot of them didn't know. And so just going and talking to them about the science that has been done, the research that has been done, that's funded by organizations like NSF and like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and also, you know, state and local governments fund this research as well, talking to them about why this research is important and what they can gain from it, I think really help them see sort of the importance of not only science-based management, but just the importance of what wildlife and natural resource managers do on a daily basis. You know, they're not just interested in a single species, but they're interested in managing, you know, an entire ecosystem, and they're interested in managing it for not only hunters, but, you know, all people who use that resource in Wisconsin. And so one group that I talked to actually had, you know, when I first arrived to the meeting, I was giving a short presentation, about 20 minutes, and they knew what I was there for, and I really got a lot of negative comments when I first arrived. And then after my presentation, they actually volunteered a lot of their time and some money to actually help some of the education programs at Sand Hill Wildlife Area. And those activities also run by the Timberwolf Information Network, because they basically said they were unaware that wolves had such a positive impact on the deer herd until they saw my presentation. and the information that the Timberwolf Information Network had to offer. It also showed the government funding science programs is beneficial specifically for them in a very applied way. So they actually saw the outcome of a lot of research and a lot of science that had been done over the last 20 years that they really weren't even aware of. I think a lot of times people are skeptical of research, you know, especially if they can't see the, you know, the applied aspect of it. And so the only way to be effective really is to go and talk to groups who have interest in the environment. So they, you know, like these rod and gun clubs, the members were already interested in conservation and management of the habitats in Wisconsin, but they were just unaware of how the research could benefit them. And the only way that could really happen is for me or somebody else to go talk to them on a personal level and talk about our shared and common goals. And I think that's important in any science field, whether it be genomics or applied wildlife management. I think people, scientists, really need to get out and explain, you know, why they're researching what they are and how it is important to understand even the most basic scientific questions.
And that was Matthew Schuler with Washington University at St. Louis. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.